Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself.
Mr. Robert Ford.
Okay, we get it. Start the show.
We here.
Oh, yeah.
We are getting ready.
Let's get it. Let's go.
Don't make it do what you do, baby.
Yeah.
That's right. Talking sports with 12 minutes coming live in your area.
Mm-mm.
What?
Not in your area.
What is... I'm just saying, you know, we're all excited, man. Again, we are officially talking sports with the 12th man. Let's get this party started. Man, July is flying by. We got a lot of things to get caught up on. We got to talk about soccer. We got to talk about the NBA free agency
just
frenzy that just happened, man. What happened? What did you say?
July is flying by. It's just 2 days of the month.
I meant to say we're just getting started. I'm sorry. I'm excited here. We just started. Yeah. I meant to say we're flying here. It's getting started.
Trying to help you out.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's all good, man.
I was gonna let him ride, but now Rob.
I would say how excited we were to get this month started here. Maybe I should have clarified that. Yeah. Once again. Yeah. So again, we are officially talking sports. Rob just stole all my thunder, everything that I was going to come out like on fire. I was excited about the crazy frenzy, actually. I was just excited because everything had happened, man. So maybe I was just a little too excited, man. I meant to jump into that. Okay, again, how you doing, man? Doing all right? Check you.
Oh, man, I'm good. I watched the end of that Reds Boris game. You know, they're just excited enough to be mediocre to keep me interested. But as long as they ain't 25 games on the 500, I'm still going to be invested. So I'm doing good. Sitting out here in this hot Atlanta. It's so muggy. I cut the grass today. Your brother is tired, but I'm ready to talk some sports because, waiting on Kawhi. How you doing, brother?
I don't know why you're cutting the grass in this weather, bro. That's almost like that's pretty deadly, man. So just
I started at 7:30.
Hydrated.
Just a caveat.
Okay.
I started at 7:30.
Okay.
I didn't cut it like in prime time heat. No. I'm trying to live.
Okay. I was going to say, man. Anyway, again, I just want to make sure that you're taken care of, man, because I know a lot of times, you know, if it was a honeydew thing and the wife made you do it, I get it, man, but I feel you.
Mm-mm.
So, all good.
Why, please, Toronto is begging you.
Hey, you know, not at this point. You better come to L.A. We didn't miss on everybody else. We need it now.
Yeah,
that's a good thing.
Out there, bro. I'm just saying.
I agree.
Jay Clooney.
They're in Toronto.
No, hell no. Hater.
The Lakers are plastic, and so is Los Angeles.
See?
He was waiting.
He fake.
All we wanted to ask
Dan Toronto.
This evening
City with
welcome to the show, bro.
City with flavor.
Oh,
yeah, he just walk into the door hating. Off rip.
Man, what's going on, bro? Just say how you doing this evening, bro. That's all you got to do.
That's how I'm feeling. I'm feeling that Kawhi should go to Toronto. That's how I'm feeling.
He's talking a lot of junk, man.
But
really quickly, let's get this point. Rob is on a whole other level over here.
No, the Lakers got Jared Dudley and Troy Daniels today. That's all he needs.
Stop it.
They don't need no Kawhi.
You don't quit playing with me.
Wow. All right.
That's all
they
need. Come on,
Andre.
You're supposed to be on my side, bro.
I mean, I hate the Lakers, but I mean, again, I mean, it's not like that. I mean, you know, it's always good, man. Competition, but you know, it's all good. So again, anyway.
Oh, the hate so much.
I don't hate.
Hate
I mean,
hate.
Like
you
actually,
just said you
actually,
hate the Lakers.
Actually, I mean, that is actually, I did say that. That was
well, where's
strong.
Gary
I mean, Curry? Like,
that's
what
they hate the Lakers, too. Join the party.
All right.
I'm not jumping on JQ because, again, my hate is not as strong. I mean, it's like I hate the Pelicans. I hate the Saints. And that's a lot of hate right there. But, again, it is what it is.
There you go.
Pelicans and a Hawks, not even rivals.
I'm just anything New Orleans.
New Orleans.
Yeah, so,
It's New Orleans.
Anyway.
Okay, we hate the Lakers too. Beat LA.
That's hilarious. Let's get this party started.
I love being
America.
On that hill by myself. It's great.
America, we are just coming out the gate, firing, swinging, however you want to call this, again. And my apologies. I meant to say that I'm excited for the month of July to get started 2 days in. That was what I was trying to say. But, again, all good. So, really quickly, since we are completely off the rails tonight, let's really fill the show number out. As always, the 424-243-9519. Follow us on Twitter, at the number 12. THMAN Sports, and finally Facebook.com/12thmansports is how we're going to do that as well. Let's get this party started. We're going to talk about the most topical topic right now with the U.S. women's soccer team advancing to the final. And again, I know in spite of what you say, if they're arrogant, if they are cocky, whatever, they are actually playing well. So, I guess you got to shut them up. You got to shut them up. I guess you got to shut them down. So until that happens, you know, that's what we do. So again, congrats to the U.S. women's soccer team for advancing the final. So we'll go ahead around the room as always. I can do JQ, Rob, and West Coast again. So go ahead, guys.
Yeah, it's crazy that you are so talented and so deep that you can leave Rapinoe and not play her at all, not start, not even sub in for her, and still beat England, who is a for real threat to win the cup. It's amazing to me that you can do that and still win 2-1. I mean, I watched pieces of that game, you know, at work. We had it on in the break room, and I walked in and I missed the first one, and it was Rapinoe's replacement that scored the first goal, and then Alex Morgan was the second one. But you know, they got a little lucky. They just disallowed the England second goal due to a very close offsides. But then, oh my goodness, USA's goalkeeper on that penalty kick late in the second half was money. And he's just kind of played keep away after that. But just think about that. You know, you've got Rapinoe, who is, without her, you don't beat France. And you don't start her. And they say she's got a slight hamstring injury, and they will tell her for it. But with all the chips in the middle of the table, you know, to advance to the world, you know, to the finals, you don't start her and still find a way to win that game. Just speaks to the depth and the level of competitiveness that USA women's team has. If the men could only be a fraction of that, oh, my goodness, it'd be amazing. But I give those ladies a ton of credit for going out there, being hunted, and going out and still finding a way to win. That's a big win for them. And, you know, hopefully they hold up and they win the finals, and we'll see what happens in that game. But, you know, much love to the U.S. women for putting it down in France today. They're rolling through contenders, and again, they're the hunted, and they're still finding ways to win, even without their best players. You're not even starting Carly Lloyd or Rapinoe, and you're still finding a way to win. That's crazy to me.
Yeah, well, one thing I will say, obviously we displaying our hate for the Lakers, but I could speak for all of us at Talking Sports with the 12 Man, and we are rooting for the same team in this, and Team USA mm-hmm. and the women's soccer team. So we, America, we all are on the same page with the women's soccer team. Yeah, as JQ mentioned, very impressive turnout so far for Team USA in the Women's World Cup. Obviously, big win today, as JQ mentioned, without Rapinoe. I mean, that was straight up huge. Obviously, Alex Morgan scored the game winner in the 31st minute. That was her first goal since the first match in the World Cup. First match in the World Cup. So, and of course, you know, Alyssa with the penalty kick save, that was huge to save that victory for Team USA. Right now, we have 11 straight victories in the World Cup. In the Women's World Cup. Yeah, that's the longest of any country. Norway is second with 10. So right now the United States women's soccer team has 11 straight victories in a World Cup. That is the most. That's the longest winning streak in the FIFA Women's World Cup history. So that's we just passed Norway. We're tied with Norway with 10, but now today makes it 11. We'll have an opportunity this weekend to make a 12 straight victory as we await the winner of tomorrow's match between the Netherlands and Sweden. England will play the loser of that matchup on Saturday in the third-place matchup. So, obviously, going to be really interesting. We'll be paying attention to that matchup tomorrow between Sweden and the Netherlands. So, and obviously, we're the first team to make it to 3 consecutive World Cup finals as well. So, women's soccer team for the U.S. is kicking ass right now. and taking names.
Hey.
And, yeah, so we're doing it big. Yeah,
still
yeah.
down.
And, even at halftime, we outside England by 9-3 by halftime. So a more aggressive team turned out to be the winner in this matchup, and they have to continue to do that in the final this weekend.
You got five dudes talking about the show. I was talking about women's soccer. I'm just that's how impressive they've been.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, you know, here in Portland, we have seven of the members on our U.S. national team on this team here in Portland. And the Portland women in this professional soccer league here in North America, they're drawing more than 19,000 people, which is by far the largest draw in any of the women's professional leagues in North America. Where I want to go, and it's, you know, sad for me to say this, I think the difference, and I'm looking at it, the American women are probably the highest paid. They probably have the highest money backing than any country in this World Cup. These women are professional women with paychecks not equal to the men, but more than any of the rest of the women in the World Cup, including, and I've heard some of our American women talk about it, that Federation, the FIFA Federation, needs to invest more money and even up the playing field around the world. And especially I want to talk about in the African countries for women's sports. They're still having to hold jobs. They're still carrying buckets of water most of their day besides trying to practice to be a soccer star in the world. And it is a stark difference. And in this sport of soccer, women's soccer, it seems like the countries with the riches, the countries with the wealth, are the teams that are killing it in the women's soccer. And the countries that are poor and the countries that don't have these kind of resources and doesn't have this kind of backing are lagging way behind. It is, I've said this about soccer in this country, it's working for the women. Around the world, the soccer stars are ghetto kids out of Brazil, ghetto kids out of Mexico, ghetto kids out of the Netherlands, ghetto kids out of Germany. And in this country, it's the ghetto kids play football and basketball. The ghetto kids in this country do not play soccer. And it's kind of, soccer in this country is kind of like following tennis, following hockey. You have to have resources. You have to have income to be in those clubs and participate in our soccer. And that's, well, I think that's the dark reason why our men's soccer team is, the women are embarrassing the men's soccer team. They are flat embarrassing the men's national soccer team. In my opinion, they just are. But like I said, with the women that's working, the ones with the means are the best in the world. In the men's, it's a stark difference. It's kind of the poorer countries and kind of the ghetto kids from the poorer countries that are dominating in the men's world of soccer. And you can see the difference between the two.
Good point, Curtis.
Wow.
I will say that the phenomenal. That was great, Curtis. My hat's off to you. That was a good commentary there. I will say that the women, that these this particular women's team, and we've had good women's soccer for a while now, but this particular group, they're just a cut above everybody. They're like the Bulls or something, back in the Jordan days. I mean, they're that good. They're just dominating.
Well, they're like when Pele was killing everybody back in the early days of their 50s and 60s. And Brazil was winning World Cups after World Cup. They were just that. Pele might be the greatest soccer player we've ever seen.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, like I said, I mean, good commentary on that too. Yeah, good call on that too, Curtis. And let's kind of keep this moving here. I know that was, I was curious because a lot of times too, you do wonder about the gap between the U.S. women and everything else to the other countries in the world too. I mean, because obviously, like you said, that's a great analogy too. Talk about basketball and kind of how the other countries haven't caught up yet too, man. So again, I know that we thought that obviously England was going to put up a better challenge, but that just goes to show you, again, we were talking about the depth of the women and just how incredible they played. So, again, congrats to them. And, we'll see if the other world can catch up as far as to what the United States is putting out, too. So let's switch gears here. Let's talk about a very tragic story about a young pitcher that actually passed. So the Angels and Rangers hold a moment of silence for Tyler Skaggs. I'll let JQ kind of talk about that. So go ahead, JQ.
Yeah, man, that was really sad when I saw that happen. You saw the outpouring from all MLB, all the guys that have played in minor league baseball with him that has touched any part of his life playing with the Angels in his brief career. It's just really sad to see that guy, die unexpectedly. I still don't think we've got an official ruling of what happened to him quite as yet. You might just, need the autopsy to try to figure out what happened to him. But When you have that kind of outpouring of grief and love from players that are no longer even playing for the Angels, just guys that have crossed his path to say, yeah, me and him played for this year. He was always a leader. He was always a good dude. I hope the Angels and everybody prays for his wife and his family and they look out for him. It's just really sad to ever see that happen. And the way, like I said, the way you see the people are coming out for him, it lets you know what kind of dude that he was. Because, yeah, you might get a couple of RIPs, but just the outpouring and the grief that's happened. And just to touch on my Reds, just to give you a point of it, I don't know what David Bell was doing for the Reds yesterday. He left with David Hernandez in. He got rocked and smoked by Milwaukee in the top of the seventh inning. And come to find out, him and Tyler Skaggs have played, I think, a year or two in the Angels system. And he got to Twitter and was talking about his love for Tyler in his post. And it was like, man, I don't know if you thought that he was going to have like an out of world experience, trying to pitch in that state of mind of grief, and it backfired on the Reds. And of course, that's nowhere near as important to Tyler's life and what he brought to this world. But it just was his impact on people that are no longer even with his organization that affects him like that. And you could tell it just affected him. He just didn't have it. His mind and his heart, his body and his soul, with Tyler Skaggs and his family. He just didn't have it on the mound. And I blame the Reds for putting him in that situation and trying to capitalize on saying, well, he can have an out-of-world body experience. But you can't bet on that, because you could tell how much it affected him. And he, like I said, all the outpouring support that he got for his family, it's just really sad that happened to that young kid. I mean, RIP to him, and, hopefully everybody rallies around his family and can kind of help them move through this difficult process in this time.
Rob?
Yeah, definitely, a tough situation. I know that was a tough decision. The Rangers and the Angels had to play under those circumstances on tonight. But obviously, they took the moment of silence, which obviously was the right thing to do. But, your heart just goes out to a situation like that to see a young kid, 27 years old, just die in a hotel room. So I think, JQ covered it for the most part, but, I would just say, prayers go out to him and his family. And obviously a tough situation, especially for the Angels organization as well, for them to have to play through that particular situation. I think one of the players said it best. It's like they got punched in the chest really hard, you know, when he heard that news. And so, I mean, that's a really just a tough situation. You know, a kid that's got his whole life in front of him. So, I mean, you really hate to see that. Once again, prayers go out to his family and the Angels organization.
Absolutely. To hear something like that, you know, it really puts things, you know, whether it's sports and our love for sports and our love for our teams, it really puts these sorts of things really put that in perspective because, you know, that young man, you know, he didn't get a chance. He didn't get a chance to, you know, live that life and enjoy his family and all the things that we're going to get to do tomorrow and the next day, you know, God willing. So, you know, my thoughts and my prayers are with his family, his teammates, his friends, you know, the people around the league that have been, you know, have come in contact with him and played on the teams together with him and, you know, coming up, whether it's college or in the, you know, minors, whatever, you know, so there's so many people that can be touched by something like this. And I just pray that, you know, everybody can have a sense of peace and just reflect on, you know, what a great person this guy was and, you know, the positive side of it, because that's really all we can do in these sorts of situations.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to get his jersey. And when I go to baseball games this year, I'll be wearing that Angels jersey with his number. I've had a lot of younger deaths around me in my life and in some of my family. And one of the things that gives me solace with people that I've had to deal with in my particular circumstance is that he was called by God. For some reason, when you're called, you're called. You're called by God. And that is a thing that gives me solace. And that's the thing that gives me, you know, when you're called by God, there's nothing greater. He did what God wanted him to do and brought him home. And like I said, my reaction to that is to wear his jersey. When you kind of celebrate, and when I wear his jersey and I go to baseball games, that is going to be a celebration of the life he lived and the person that he was. I did that for that kid in football that left the Arizona Cardinals and went to Afghanistan, I believe. Yeah, and got killed over there. Yeah, and I did that for that. Also, these things affect me, and I'm going to be really curious. I'm sorry. I'm going to be really curious what the autopsy shows and what it is, because it just blows my mind when young people die. And I've seen some young college kids die in their dorm rooms. And when I was in Hawaii, I saw kids, you know, come on their campus visits to Hawaii to have fun. And some of the young kids would die in Hawaii. And it's always blown my mind, but I'm always kind of curious what it was. And I'm going to be really curious about what it was here. And I do go solace with also that saying, only the good die young. And the rotten people in our lives are never going to die. They're going to be around us forever.
I think we disagree with that. I disagree. I think you think that they have it better, but yeah, they're not happy with Black too, man. But that's my little two cents on that too. So anyway, yeah, everyone has made some great comments on that, and we're going to try to at least lighten up the mood here and let's talk about another interesting scenario. And let's talk about Bryce Harper here, kind of keeping in baseball here. And the next question is he overrated or underachieving? And I've always, you know, thought he was overrated for sure. But he's probably doing a little bit of both, I would say, honestly, because, again, getting that contract was, you know, for him, even whenever he was going into the year, whenever the thoughts or whenever the rumors about him becoming that player. Again, I know it's a lot of pressure, but I'm not crying for Bryce Harper, you know, again. So, you know, he definitely is not living up to the contract, as I say. And I've got a lot of Phillies fans, and one of the Phillies fans called me today and was like, yo, I'll trade you Bryce Harper for Ronald Acuna Jr. I'm like, man, get out of here. So it's just crazy how he's even over it, man. But, again, this is a Philly fan, too, a hardcore Philly fan, too. So, again, you better turn it around, Bryce. You got a second half to kind of do what you got to do, man. So go ahead. What are your thoughts on that?
Thank you. Well, the thing about it is, and we talked about it, when you get these crazy contracts where you're making $30+ million a year, how can you ever live up to that contract? Like, in today's baseball, he's batting .250. You look at him and say, man, we're paying this dude this kind of money. He's batting .250. And you're supposed to be like, hell no. But you look at him, he's got 15 home runs. He's got 59 RBIs. And we haven't made it to the All-Star break quite yet. So you project that over a total season of 30 to 35 home runs and 125 RBIs, that is a very good season. We're in a different kind of baseball world where guys really necessarily aren't hitting for average anymore. You're either hitting the home run, you're either doubling, or you're striking out. And everybody's okay with that. So when you sign that kind of contract, everybody's expecting you to bat to be Tony Gwynn. You got to be almost batting 400 every year, also with the power and stealing bases and having all kind of outfield assists. So he's, to me, he's never going to live up to that contract. I think people view him because they feel like Bryce Harper is a cancer and a malcontent, and they look and say, you know what, he's not worth that money. And you look at Mike Trout getting crazy money. Well, Mike Trout, he's more for average, and he still has that kind of power, but he seems like a more likable dude. And I think that's the problem that Bryce Harper has. If Bryce Harper went to a PR kind of specialist and said, hey, how can I rehab my image and make myself more, you know, lovey-filly, you know, touchy-filly kind of thing, and he could kind of, like, mold that and get more towards the Mike Trout kind of piece of it, then you wouldn't feel that way about him. But everybody looks at Bryce Harper and says, you know what, he's an ass anyway. Look at him striking out. Yeah. But when you look at his numbers and you say, oh, well, he's still going to hit 34 home runs and still have over 100 RBIs on the year, that's still a very, very good season for your right fielder. But when you sign that kind of deal, the expectations go through the roof. They want you to be Tony Gwynn combined with Ted Williams combined with Derek Jeter. And if you fall anything short of that, then you're a failure, especially if you're not a lovable kind of guy. And he's a prickly kind of guy. So I think his problem is more of a PR thing. If he could find a way to be more lovable, social media-wise, mainstream-wise, like Mike Trout is, then you won't be as upset with him in terms of his numbers. But he's not that guy. Mike Trout is more lovable. People love Mike Trout. And Mike Trout is a phenomenal athlete. I only compare them because of the contract they signed both in this offseason. But people have already had preconceived notions of who Mike Trout is as a person, and they are more willing to embrace him than they are Bryce Harper right now. So Bryce Harper has a long time to go on that contract to try to get to that point. But his numbers aren't awful in today's game of baseball of not necessarily hitting for average, but hitting for power and strikeouts, because that's just what they do. That's just where we are in baseball in 2019. But his perception to everybody else, I think, is more what's holding him back.
Go ahead, Rob.
Well, I mean, once again, I think covered pretty well already. But, you know, you look at he and Manny Machado was kind of underachieved this year. Neither one of them making an all-star team. And they're the two highest-paid players in baseball this year. I mean, that is mind-boggling. And Harper leads the league with 101 strikeouts. And that's on pace to break his previous career high of 169. That is unbelievable that he's going to break his previous career high with the money he's making. Right now, 101 strikeouts, previous career high of 169. That is insane. And like I said, Machado as well, the other highest paid player in baseball, not making an All-Star team either, it's flat out insane for the amount of money that those two guys are making, and neither one of them going to the All-Star game. From a team perspective, the Phillies are still only 5.5 games out of first in the National League East. They're tied for second in the National League wild card slot. Machado is still on pace to total career high in home runs and RBIs.
Right.
Padres, of course, sit a game and a half out of the wild card slot. So, I mean, he's probably still closer to playing at an all-star level in Machado. But, you know, once again, you know, for that kind of money, you expect both of those guys to be an all-star team.
And that's the problem. It's the money. And I agree with you, Rob. The thing about it is that how do you ever live up to that money? You have to have some kind of crazy sustained excellence over a 4 or 5 year period to even come close to justifying the kind of money that they're making. And that's what the world they're living in. They signed those contracts, so I'm not crying for them. They're living really good in Philadelphia and San Diego, respectively, on those contracts. But when you sign that for that kind of money, the expectations go through the roof, and I don't think they can ever really live to it. You got to bat 320 with the power and no strikeouts. But if we're being honest, we all watch baseball. That's not the baseball we live in right now. There's not a whole lot of contact hitters that are going to bat 383 and give you power numbers as well and steal bases and be a stud in the whatever position they play. It just doesn't happen like that in today's baseball because that's the way today's baseball is played. I'll put it out to all you guys. When's the last time you've seen somebody, no matter where they are in the batting order, but to get a runner over and steal a base and manufacture a run? That doesn't happen no more. When we grew up, that's what happens. You stole bases, you bunt it, you sacrifice flies, you manufacture runs. Nowadays, you hit a 3-run home run or you strike out, and everybody's okay with that, unless you're making $325 million over the course of your contract, then everybody's pissed off about it. So they're in the middle of that trick bag of you signed that contract, you knew what you were getting into, and nobody's crying for you. But when you make that kind of money, you have to go above and beyond expectations, and they're not there yet. They're sitting there with everybody else, but they're not making everybody else kind of money.
Well, as long as they fill those stands up, I guess the owners are feeling like these guys are meeting the expectations. They're getting their money's worth. These teams are making a lot of money. It's disappointing to fans who want to see quality baseball, who want to see a guy that's like a Tony Gwynn or whatever that's going to, you know, hit close to 400
right.
and, you know, do those types of things. That's what you're expecting, but we're just not getting that from these big contracts. And that's why I think baseball's kind of taken a bit of a step back, but it's still that moneymaker. It's still,
yeah.
You know, they're still filling those stands up, and, you know, so we bitch about it on, you know, if you watch talk radio, all kinds of talk radio, they talk about this sort of thing all the time. But that doesn't change anything because we still go to the games. And we're still watching something that we're disappointed in. So what's the answer?
Well, that's just us because we've been around, us older guys have been around. I guess the younger, you know, baseball's changed, basketball's changed in the last 10 years. Football has changed to a certain extent. I still love defense. But I have not seen the old Raider and the old Pittsburgh Steelers defense. I haven't seen a quarterback get picked up and dropped on his head in the last 5 years like I used to when I grew up. I don't see
you
guys
see
like Atkins.
You see that.
And you're not going to see that. So, but what is the difference? I think the expectations on what Bryce Harper was going to be and what that Philadelphia team was going to do, like be competing for that NL East, I think that is prickly. And I think that is the difference between with the Angels, they were never considered somebody that was going to come out of the West. And the expectations for that team were nowhere near as high as what the expectations were for Bryce Harper and what that Philadelphia team was projected by a lot of people to do. And I think that's the difference in what's Cricket League and what's and people upset. They're upset, and Philadelphia is a town that's known for that. You know, they want all their teams to win championships. And when their teams don't, they're not a happy fan group in Philadelphia. And I kind of like it. You know, I kind of like it out of Philadelphia.
We're happy about that. Yeah, we're happy. Good call, Curtis. We're happy about that. And I'll say, too, I think the biggest thing why we can talk about Bryce kind of underachieving, because you thought he was – the way that you built that roster, getting JT Realmuto, you got – you know, Jay Bruce, you got a lot of these pieces, and you thought that, you know, adding a Bryce Harper's kind of like that final piece to kind of get them over the level too, man. Then obviously, you know, Capper kind of doing his thing, man. So you just figured that that squad was getting ready, and that was the missing piece. That's another reason why you probably thought, or you're thinking that they're achieving, because, you know, you expect so much more for them. The Braves are kind of, you know, definitely leaders in that division right now too, so shout out to the Braves. But, you know, again, that's probably why you're considered them underachieving for sure. Let's keep this moving, guys.
Yeah, but you also
– here. Yeah,
good. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, finish up.
You know, having a problem with the domestic violence, and I'm never going to co-sign that. And then because you're getting hurt, but you look at him and you still say you got Realmuto, you still got Reese Hoskins, you still have Bryce Harper that we talked about. Like, you still have enough to be able to weather the storm. Like, you feel like you had a super team, and when you still have a couple of guys go down, you feel like those superstars are supposed to step up until those guys come back. And a piece of it is I agree with you guys, is that it's just that we live in a different baseball now. They play a different brand of baseball than we used to. But when you put that kind of money onto it, nobody wants to hear this is a different brand of baseball. They say go out there and produce now. And when you don't do that, but they're doing it in the landscape of the current of what baseball is, us fans seeing them get paid that kind of money and they're producing only to that level, we're like, hey, man, what the hell is that? You're making all this money. You're supposed to be able to go above and beyond and supersede that. Even though this is where the game is today. And that's why I agree with you, Curtis, on that. This is a different brand of baseball. But when you make that kind of money, nobody's trying to hear this is a different brand of baseball. You are a superstar getting paid superstar money. You're supposed to be able to transcend that level of baseball. So that's when you sign that contract, you sign up for that. And like it or not, that's where you are. But you can't look back and say this is what everybody else is doing, but nobody else is getting paid like he's getting paid. So that's why he's underachieving. If you get paid like that, you got to be a star. And I'll leave that alone to talk about some of the NBA free agency, but it's that kind of thing of when you pay a good player like he's a very good player, and you pay a very good player like he's a great player, and you don't get the results, you get pissed off.
Yep, that's nailed around the head. All right, that's exactly what that is. But, good call. There's definitely, from what we expect, expectations, and like you said, as far as, you know, not co-signing when you play with domestic violence is true. All right, we're going to switch gears here. We're going to talk about some basketball. And as far as what happened this past weekend, the NBA definitely wins because, I mean, it was crazy. I was actually DJing an event and just getting all the updates was going. My phone was going nuts, and I couldn't follow everything. But definitely the NBA wins, man. And this is definitely going to be a competitive and a very interesting season, man, to say the least. So let's talk about a couple moves. Obviously, talk about Brooklyn. Not competing, or can they compete year one without Durant? I will say this. I mean, obviously, you kind of thought that Durant was not going to come back this year too, and then getting Kyrie was kind of a coup. And then, you know, I think they can definitely hold water just because as far as how the East is, a lot of flurry of moves, if you will. And I think he did make this move to kind of get on LeBron's level, even though I know that we know that Durant is not – going to he didn't want that all the attention on him, so that's why let's need a star player to kind of help him as far as Brooklyn. We'll talk about that, and I'll let you guys get your thoughts on that, as well as just the overwhelmingly disappointment from New York Knicks fans. Shout out to my boy Dwayne; he's pretty upset about that because he was just thinking that the Knicks had a shot, and I was gonna be like, yeah, bro, you had no shot, just because of the dysfunction with what's happening with the Knicks. And it's just crazy because you thought them clearing all that space was four to get Durant, and then he comes out, and Dolan comes out and says, I wouldn't even interest. That's just crazy. So, again, Brooklyn, way to do your thing. I'll let you guys go around the table and kind of get your thoughts. So we got about 20 minutes in the show, too. So go ahead, guys. Go ahead, JQ.
Yeah, and think about it. And we talked about it before with L.A. thinking, oh, we can sell you on being the Lakers, you know, Southern California, and it's only going to be 75 degrees. It's going to be awesome. Guys want to win, except for Jimmy Butler, because he went to Miami. He clearly just wants to be the man and not wants to win. But I digress. But most of these free agents are looking at organizational, you know, culture and standpoint of who do you have on your team. I don't care where you play. If I have other guys that I believe in and I'm a baller and I know other ballers when I see them, then I want to go play there. So when you see that happen, I'm not as surprised when you see the Knicks strike out. We talked about the Nets, and I talked about last week in terms of the Knicks fans saying, oh, my God, we're losing to the Nets and we're the New York Knicks. These guys aren't looking at it like that anymore. They're saying, what can you do for me? How can you help? As much as I can help you, what can you do to help me? So you look at DeAndre Jordan and Kawhi Leonard. And Kyrie and Kevin Durant going to the Nets. You say, oh, my God, how did the Nets get those guys? Well, the Nets have some really sound fundamental pieces on that roster. They say, okay, if three of us go there with the guys that's already under contract, man, we can really do some things, especially in the East. We can get out of that, you know, cauldron that is the Western Conference. So I'm not overly surprised that those things have happened. But, you know, again, I alluded to a little earlier, some of the guys that get paid a step above where they are, we talked about in our text, Chris Middleton, that the Bucks are going to regret that contract. I feel like the 76ers are going to regret paying Tobias Harris that kind of money. I feel like Orlando is going to regret paying Vucevic and Terrence Ross that kind of money. It sounds good when you're trying to win free agency, but as the Redskins have showed us in the NFL, winning free agency does not mean a thing in terms of actually winning the ring when it comes down to winning the Super Bowl or NBA title or MLB championship or NHL title. So I think that when we step back and look at it as fans and we watch these guys make moves, outside of a couple of outliers, guys are valuing organizational culture stability above anything else.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we're going back to the question here of, you know, can the Brooklyn Nets compete without Kevin Durant this year? And my answer to that is, for a championship, no. Playoff team, yes. Obviously, this was a team that made the playoffs last year without Kevin Durant. And you pretty much just trading Kyrie for D'Angelo Russell. And then you were also able to add DeAndre Jordan to get more of a defensive presence down there, go with Jared Allen. And they have some guys that can score on the wing as well. So I think this is obviously a team that's a little bit better than it was last year without even without Kevin Durant. And then, of course, if he can come back healthy the following season, then obviously if he can come back the following season and be the same Kevin Durant, then you're talking about a team that's going to be competing for a championship for a few years. But, yeah, I still see them being a playoff team next year with Kyrie and DeAndre Jordan and the role players that they have on the team right now. They were 6th seed without them last year. And so I definitely see that they can still be a playoff team based on what we currently see, the way that team is constructed at this moment. In regards to the Knicks, and here's the thing you got to realize. I mean, Brooklyn, if Brooklyn was a standalone city outside of New York City, would be the third largest metro area in the United States. I mean, Just put that in perspective. So, I mean, you're still talking about a very major area, a very major market here we're talking about if Brooklyn stood alone outside of New York City. So, I mean, this is just not some, they're still going to get a lot of glory in that area if they can find a way to win the title in Brooklyn. And, you know, we haven't had a team in Brooklyn since the Brooklyn Dodgers way back in the day. So this is still a pretty big deal. I know the Knicks have more fame and notoriety over their history, but the Knicks have not won a championship since 1972. get over it. Stephen A. Smith and all his whining he's doing on TV. And the Knicks have not been relevant in the NBA in 20 years. I mean, they have not been relevant. So,
you're right.
And he has not won a championship in almost 50 years. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Oh, no,
that
was a good 50. The last championship they won was with that Walt Frazier. Yeah, the Walt Frazier and Willis Reed. That was 50 years ago.
Yeah, now the Knicks didn't hit a home run on one of the big five.
That was
a good
90s. Oh, I remember that.
I'll finish my comment here. The Knicks did not make a splash on the big five or the big six when it comes to free agency, but they made a few quality signings, in my opinion. And Julius Randle had a really good season this year. I mean, he does keep improving on the defensive end, but his offensive game has gone up to a better level. He's improved his shooting, his low post. I really like Elfrid Payton as a solid ball player. Bobby Porter, another guy, had a really good year. Bobby Porter's another guy had a really good year. So they didn't make a splash on one of the top four or five or six teams. But they made a few quality signings to make them a little bit more competitive. I don't know if it makes them a playoff team, but they made a few quality signings that I like in Julius Randle, Bobby Portis, and Elfrid Payton.
Yeah, and real fast, I don't disagree with that. And we talked about that. I'm sorry to get off of my first statement of the Nets in particular, because we talk about LeVert, we talk about Jared Allen, we talk about Joe Harris. You talk about some guys that are really good fundamental pieces they have as you put those guys. You know you're getting basically a redshirt year in terms of Kevin Durant and his injury.
And anybody has a player named LeVert on the team, you know they're going to put together some string music.
So here we go. I had a feeling he was going to go to I knew that was coming somewhere.
But, I'm sorry.
My only point of it is you're right about Brooklyn in terms of the landscape of it. But when we talk about the change in landscape of you can still do things based on name alone. If you're the Knicks, you can always win over the Nets. If you're the Lakers, you can always win over the Clippers. I just don't think that you have that landscape in the NBA anymore. I think these guys are more valuing about beyond name and location. Who do you have on your team that's going to allow me to win games and allow us to advance further in the playoffs? And beforehand, you could get guys on the allure of a name and a prestige and of a tradition. But if your culture today sucked, then they were still like, okay, you know what, I can go in there, me solo, I can go in there and I can change that culture. I feel like guys are like, you know what, I can't do that. And if I can, I'm not willing to sacrifice 1, 2, 3 years of this 4 or 5 year contract to try to do that and burn myself out. And then now I'm only looking at maybe 1 or 2 years of a window to actually win. That was my only point. Yeah, I think the Nets, for real, basically have a better foundation than the Knicks do all day, every day. It was just more of a fact. I mean, you see that kind of star power go to the Nets when the Knicks could have them, you know, cap-wise and fit them into that. And the fact they choose not to go to the Mecca and go to the Barclays Center, it's just for me and all of us, I think, being more old-school kind of fans of like, oh, my God, I never would have saw the day that I would saw, you know, like was it 3 of the top 15 or 20 free agents choose Brooklyn over the Nets over the Knicks. It's just a little jarring, but it's got to reset our thinking of what these guys are looking for when they're looking at free agents to go to another destination.
Back the bus up.
Uh-oh.
I've been hearing a lot about this. And this was on the radio that I was listening to this morning. And I had totally forgot about this. And I think this was only a couple of years ago. And the talk radio I was listening to said this was ugly. James Dolan had Charles Oakley escorted out of the Senate. And was he in handcuffs?
He got into it.
What NBA player? And I know Charles Oakley was one of the boys. And I know Charles Oakley was one of the good guys out there and cool guys out there. And you've got an idiot owner escorting one of your boys out of the center in handcuffs. The problem, and I'm hearing on other radio things, is this guy named James Dolan, who's the owner of the Knicks. And if he really did that, I'm going to go on the internet and I'm going to find that thing and I'm going to look at that thing hard.
He did it.
I don't want to run into them. I don't want to run into them, you know. And if I was a basketball player and he did that to somebody that I idolized and I thought was one of the boys in our league, and you know, there's that component there, you know, it turns into F the Knicks. And it might be that way around the league because of what this idiot is.
That's a good call.
And
it
that
is.
Might be what's
that's
going on there.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yep.
You see Matt Barnes on the jump talking about James Dolan. Nobody's coming there. You got to sell the team. Like, when you have other players like Matt Barnes that's not recently long retired from the league telling you that on the jump, and I don't think he was shooting, trying to get ratings and trying to be a talking head. I think he was talking about what other players that are recently retired or how currently in the league, how they view the New York Knicks. And that's the point of the whole conversation, is that allure of just being the New York Knicks and playing Madison Square Garden is no longer enough. If your organization and your culture is not right, you're not getting those guys, period.
Yep. Yeah. And the thing that keeps pissing me off about this whole situation, the Knicks are not a prime organization. They have not been irrelevant in 20 years. They haven't won a championship in 50 years. So I don't understand why we keep talking about the Knicks, the Knicks, the Knicks, the Knicks. I know they're in New York, but they have not been a relevant franchise for quite some time in the National Basketball Association. And it just pisses me off
where
the media just keeps talking about.
No. Stop it. You can't have it both ways. The same way if the Yankees went through a bad period, they still say, you know what, we got 27 titles with the Yankees. If they went through
the Yankees
15
are
years of being bad,
the Knicks are not.
You got to listen to my point, because it's New York, and it will always be that piece of it. If the Yankees go through hard times and they have a decade of being bad, I mean being real bad, but they're still the Yankees.
How long have
the
New York
Yankees got 27 titles? I'm just giving you the point. The New York media market, they will always try to steer people that way, even if those teams aren't low. I'm only making
the New York football
Yankees have a problem. And people are still talking about the Jets are going to get. They got Le'Veon Bell. The Jets going to come back. They're going to get such and such and such and such.
But you don't
hear people
talking about the Jets like this, like they talk about the Knicks.
Only because they have the Giants, who are a better franchise. Only because they have the Giants, who are a better football franchise. But if you flip the script to basketball, even though the Knicks haven't been relevant for a while, they are still a better franchise historically than the Nets are. That's the thing.
Cool. That's true. That's true. You expect them to be a better squad for sure. But I agree with everything that what everyone said, especially Curtis.
They are better franchise historically than the Nets, but they still have not been relevant.
They have not been relevant to the NBA for quite some time.
It's been 3 years since they won the championship.
They will never let any team with New York in the front of their team be out of the conversation. The same way with L.A. The Lakers ain't been doing nothing, but they ain't going to let the Lakers fall off the wayside. If you got New York, whatever, L.A.,
but the Lakers
whatever.
Have a prime history. As much as I hate them, they have a great history. The Knicks
have
two championships
in
their entire history.
Wow. True.
Wow.
It's about the TV. Wow. I think it's about the TV markets. You know, the two biggest cities are LA
and New York.
And New York. Yeah, and you know, when you can get the whole country watching a championship, that's what they want. They want that that market rating, and the two biggest market ratings they're gonna get is having a New York team against the LA team. And
hope for that.
All the people on the coast and get somebody in the middle. They don't want a Milwaukee team and a San Antonio team. They lose a lot of heart and shield.
Well, I disagree with that slightly, because that used to be that way, but that's not that doesn't apply to the NFL and the NBA. That applies more to baseball. But when it comes from a ratings perspective, you know, the NBA and the NFL, they get their ratings pretty much stay the same regardless of who in the finals these days. It used to be like that, but not anymore. I mean, even in the NFL, you know, if the Jacksonville Jaguars and the New Orleans Saints make it to the Super Bowl, which are probably the two smallest markets, well, you got Green Bay as the smallest market. Those teams make it to the Super Bowl, the ratings are still going to be the same. And the NBA has got to that point, too. As well, and we just saw that with Toronto Raptors, the team is not even in the U.S. and the American Ratings.
Because they were playing Golden State.
Miss a beat. They were playing.
But
Golden
they don't count because they don't count the Canadian Ratings.
You go back to the Spurs and Miami, and when they were in the finals, too, 4, 5, 6, 7, whatever many years ago was that. We still had the same.
We're never going to get to this.
The market does not apply. When LeBron was in Cleveland, they still watched too, didn't they?
LeBron has been outliers.
LeBron has held up the league. He's one of those guys. Mm-hmm. Jordan held up the league. You know, Magic and Bird held up the league.
You make my point.
And LeBron, people have been watching LeBron for 15 years.
Why can play for any team and get the TV rating?
Those are outliers, though.
Wow.
Those are outliers. Look how long it took San Antonio to get to that point, though. San Antonio 15, 20 years ago couldn't boast that. San Antonio built up a culture and built up a following, and then they got to that point. So they built that up. I think those are outliers. You're talking about San Antonio. It took 20 years to build it up versus LeBron James, who's one of the maybe top five players of all time, playing each other. But if you get, like, two teams that upset a couple of teams and make it to the finals, those ratings will tank. I promise you they will.
Mm. All right. We're going to be here all night talking about this. We got literally three minutes and 50-something seconds here. So we're going to get ready to talk about the OT portion. We do got to talk about as much. Jake is going to be alone on a hill, if you will. But we're going to set the stage for five teams that Kawhi should go to except the Lakers. We're going to talk about that.
Die line, die line, die line, and die line.
Spin hot fire, huh? Spin hot fire. So literally, as brief as
that I don't think there's five teams.
I think it's only three.
He's definitely only considering three teams right now, but that's just a hypothetical question. That's all.
It's a hypothetical. All right, we got like a minute. So JQ, you got a minute really quickly. Talk about the best available free agents for Lakers if Kawhi goes somewhere else. And then we're gonna let Rob do the OT, and then we're gonna talk about this in the OT. But go ahead, JQ.
None. You're talking about basically you already have your front court. If you talk about AD, LeBron, and Kuzma, so you're basically talking about Rondo and maybe Danny Green. When they waited on Kawhi, they've lost out on the boat for everybody else. So now it's all Kawhi or bust. So I don't have five. I've got two because I feel like you've got your 3, 4, and 5 already set. Now you need a 1 and 2. I think Rondo wants to go back there. I think Danny Green would go to LA if Kawhi went there, and that's just not me.
I thought Green signed with the Rockets, if I'm not mistaken. But check that. But go ahead.
I'm talking about Danny Green.
Okay, Danny. Okay, perfect.
If I'm talking about Kawhi, we can talk about the Clippers. That's nice. Yeah. Okay. They got Patrick Beverley to resign. Whatever. It's about Toronto because you know those guys. You know the whole organization, the coach, whatever. The chance to go back-to-back repeat. It's either Toronto or it's the Lakers. That's it. I just don't really feel like it's the Clippers if he's really being honest with himself. He can go and try to compete with LeBron. I just don't think that's going to – you got to compete with more than LeBron. You got everybody else to compete with as well. And you've seen the landscape of what's happened. So, to me, for Kawhi, it's those two cities and that's it.
90 seconds, Rob.
Two franchises.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I mean, as far as anybody outside of Kawhi Leonard,
you know, the player that's coming to mind, I hope he don't go to the Lakers either, but no teams are really talking to him right now. That's DeMarcus Cousins. I mean, if we're talking about someone outside of Kawhi Leonard, I mean, that's the one player that comes to mind. I mean, you see Wilson Chandler going to Brooklyn, so that was another guy. But, you know, as JQ mentioned, you know, they have the front court already. I mean, that was another nice pickup. For Brooklyn
set,
as well.
Set the OT, Rob. You got a minute. Go ahead and do that OT, then we'll finish this in the OT. Set it up, bro.
Yep.
Ladies and gentlemen, we thank you all for tuning in to another great edition with Talking Sports with 12th Man.
Excellent.
And New York, get over it. Y'all haven't won a championship in 50 years. And, wow. Oh, my God. Nick, wow. The Jets haven't won nothing since Joe Namath promised
this
championship.
Oh, my God.
But anyway, we still want y'all to tune in, New York. I love
back.
The city.
Oh, my God.
I love the Brooklyn. I love the pizza in Brooklyn. But anyway, thank you all for tuning in. Another great edition of Talking Football Fan. We're going to be back on the air live on Wednesday night next week. Wednesday night will be our show on next week. 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific. It's going to be Wednesday night. That's going to be July 10th, so you don't want to miss our next live show. We're getting ready to go into our OT portion. Unfortunately, we can't give you this portion of our show live, so click on the same link on tomorrow. The next few days, you get the rest of the show. I promise you, we got a lot more NBA to talk about, so you don't want to miss this OT portion. We still have a lot of basketball to talk about here in this free agency period, so you don't want to miss it. Make sure you click on the same link in the next few days to get the rest of the show. Good night, people.
He missed it like
Love
30
y'all.
Seconds.
Back to you, Rob.
I want to be like Bobby Bonilla when I grow up. But y'all, you missed it like 30 seconds, Rob. It's been like 10 to 20 seconds in, man. That's all good. Go ahead. Finish your thought, man.
Go for it, bro.
Yeah.
Finish up.
But, yeah, I mean, that's the one guy that come to mind to me with the Lakers. I know I don't know if Anthony Davis is interested in playing with DeMarcus Cousins a little again. I don't know, you know, what that situation is like. But he's the one guy outside of Kawhi Leonard. And like I said, I don't want to see DeMarcus Cousins go to the Lakers either, but he's the one guy that come to mind of a free agent for the Lakers outside of Kawhi Leonard.
Well, the thing about it is, and I just pose this to the group, I know nobody's beating down his door right now, but so there, I think there's been plenty of offers of a one-year, $5, $6 million deal so he can sign it, show his worth, and get back to the market. Do you think that a part of him is saying, hey, I see what's happening over there. Nobody's beating down my door with a multi-million dollar deal for most of the years. I'm going to wait this out and see what happens with Kawhi. And even if he does come or not, that might be my best bet to go to L.A. But when I talk about L.A., you're talking about LeBron, Kuzma, and AD. They've already committed to those guys. But those guys are going to play the 3, 4, and 5. So if you're DeMarcus Cousins, are you willing to go to L.A. and say, I'm probably not going to start? Unless I slide Kuzma to the 2, which I don't think he's going to work really at. If you're talking about a scheme standpoint, I don't think he's athletic enough and
Frank
fast
Kuzma
enough to guard. So you're going to sign DeMarcus Cousins and bring Kuzma off the bench? They could do that. What does that do to the L.A.-Kuzma relationship? That's why I wonder about Kuzma, because you pretty much already have your front court set for L.A. They really need shooters and a couple of point guards. They need the 1-2 and some backup threes. I just don't know how accepting Cousins will be to come in to say, hey, I got to be the sixth man of the year. Is he okay with doing that? I just don't know if he's okay
and
with
don't
doing
forget,
that.
Cousins is a shooter,
well,
too.
Curry's
so
scary.
He would help you out in that regard. He would, Cousins is a shooter. But I see your point. But here's the thing with DeMarcus Cousins right now. No team will even lose to offer him the mid-level exception right now. So it's going to be real interesting to see what happens. I mean, that's what he signed for with Golden State last year. But there's not a team in the league right now.
For Curtis Gary, which I got to say, I know y'all love this conference.
Well, you know, with DeMarcus Cousins, he can't jump over a penny anymore. You know, I was watching him.
I'm sorry.
He can't. And yeah, I'm not talking standing up. I mean flat. Okay. So the guy.
Oh my gosh.
So the guy's skill set is, you know, is dropped. Can he still shoot? You know, he did a little something in the playoffs or whatever. But, you know, I think people were really looking at that, and I think that's why he hasn't had any offers. I don't think it has anything to do with Kawhi or anybody else. I think it's his own skill set that is just diminished.
I don't know if Marcus Cousins is serious anymore. He, you know, it doesn't look like he's the kind of guy that's going to stay in shape 82 games and another 30 or 40 games in the playoffs. This boy doesn't look like he's dedicated to get in the kind of shape that he's going to need to go through an NBA season. But I'm almost positive he's looking for a paycheck. And he's going to give you a bunch of smoke and mirrors. But you really need somebody that is going to bring a lunch pail and put on a hard hat and go bust some butt. which I think Portland went and got those guys, because the West is going to be a dogfight this year. And if the L.A. Lakers look like they're going to be in the playoffs and maybe finish in one or two, then who in the West is sliding back? Who, again, let me say that, if L.A. is looking like they're going to be the team to come out of the West, who is sliding back in the West?
Golden State.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Just due to injury.
All right, we're going
Yeah.
We're going
to I'll tell you what, though. That was a pretty shrewd move by Golden State, getting D'Angelo Russell. I mean, I don't know how that fits, but, you know, Klay Thompson may be back by the end of the season next year. And if they can just hold on and make it to the playoffs, and you're talking about Steph Curry, D'Angelo Russell, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green, they were able to keep Kevin Looney. And also, the Warriors, they just signed Willie Cauley-Stein from Sacramento as well.
Yep.
So, they got another athletic big. And, I don't know if it, I didn't know they were going to get something in return for Kevin Durant, but, I mean, obviously D'Angelo Russell is not Kevin Durant by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, they could still be a contender. And I hate to say that, too, because I hate the Warriors as much as I hate the Lakers. But, that was a pretty crude move by the Warriors. And on that, well, JQ would join me on the Warriors hating.
Yep.
But,
I got an answer for
that. That's a team.
I think.
But that's a team.
I think.
Yeah, I don't think you can just write off of. I don't think you can write them off just yet.
It's all about whether Klay can come back. But here's what I say about Klay. If you watch Golden State play, his defense is slipped. It slipped a little bit. He's still a really good defensive player, but I don't know if he's still as elite as he was guarding one and two guards. So if you bring D'Angelo Russell in, you might go to a smaller backcourt and you let D'Angelo and Curry play the one and two, and you slide Klay over to the three, and he doesn't have to guard those slashers that have that kind of burst that a two guard has, so where he's still able to stay in front of a three guard. Now you have Steph at the one, D'Angelo at the two, and Klay at the three. That may work out. They may be thinking about that of, can we preserve Klay, and does he come back at the same level of athleticism to be able to guard a two and a one anymore? Maybe he's only able to guard a three, but he's tall enough and long enough and still has a good defensive acumen to guard a three guard. But now you put D'Angelo and Steph in this one and the two, and that may work for them. Just putting it out there.
Yeah.
You like it.
Yeah, and I think that's what they envision, too. I think they definitely envision moving Klay to the small forward. He's 6'7". He's got long arms. He can probably guard most small forwards in the league. And I know you say he may have slipped a step defensively, but and like I said, you know, guys are coming back from torn ACLs in about 10 months now. And so that's a very good chance if they hold on to make it to the playoffs, he will be back for that team at the end of the season next season. Now, Durant's a little different. The torn Achilles, I mean, you need at least 12 months on that. So I can't see him being back at all next season. But Klay Thompson, like I said, the Warriors will hold on and hang in there. That's a team, like I said, I don't think you can, as much as I hate them, I don't think you can write them off just yet. I mean, when he comes back, they got four all-stars still on that team.
Yeah, but he said who slides. Yeah. It's the difference between the one seed and being the eight seed. Like, that's a big slide.
Yeah. I mean, but like I said, they could still very well be a top four, top five seed and still be a championship contender if they can get Klay Thompson. But, yeah, you expect them to slide a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So if Kawhi stays in Toronto, where do you guys put the Lakers with just the two guys in? You know, well, really,
three guys,
maybe two and a half. Yeah.
There, you stop.
Two and a half. Two and a half. I'm just saying, where do you put them? I don't put them as favorites to come out of the West.
No. Without Kawhi, they're probably like a fifth or sixth seed without Kawhi. I would totally agree with that, even being an unbiased Lakers fan. Without Kawhi, with those three guys, and the fact that they've waited on Kawhi and they've missed out on the whole boatload of other free agents. But if I'm being honest, I love D'Angelo Russell. He's a Buckeye, whatever. But for $30 million a year, and I go back to my point earlier, when do you get to a point where in year two or three of these contracts and you pay these guys like a Chris Middleton? He's going to be my example. Chris Middleton, I like Chris Middleton, but they paid a very good guy to be a great player for all this money. It may be a blessing in disguise that the Lakers didn't get into that and say, you know what, we're going to eschew getting Kawhi Leonard to fill out the rest of these rosters and overpay role players and then look up in the second, third year of those contracts and say, you know what, we have no longer have any financial flexibility to help a LeBron and AD because we overpaid for a Tobias Harris or D'Angelo Russell or Patrick Beverley. So those kind of pieces there, it may be a blessing in disguise. And I could be a homer, and I will own that. But I look at some of these contracts, and I'm saying they're paying guys like a half a step or a step above to where they really are. Would you pay Tobias Harris? Would you roll the ball out and say Tobias Harris at 100 and what do you make, $160 million? You go win these series for me? No. I don't feel the same way about Chris Middleton. If Giannis gets hurt and you're paying Chris Middleton $190 million, whatever you're paying, well, Chris, you got to go win this series for us against the 76ers. Good luck. That's not going to happen. But you're paying him like that in terms of the Bryce Harper conversation. You're paying him that kind of money not to get the results that you want. So for me, a piece of me feels like, you know what, they may have saved the Lakers from themselves.
Well, here's my thoughts on that. I totally agree with what you're saying, JQ. But here's what you have to look at it too. I'm actually slightly okay with it if it's a contending team because they have to do that to stay. They feel like they have a window of opportunity to win the championship. So if you look at the Milwaukee Bucks, they were number one seed in the Eastern Conference. So they felt like they had to overpay Chris Middleton to keep them, to keep a team that's close to knocking on the door for a championship. And the same thing with the 76ers. They had to do that. You know, their team, they feel like they're close in their window of opportunities to win the championship. I mean, they're going to sign Ben Simmons to Max, Tobias. They offered Al Horford a lot of money. And we'll talk about them in a minute. To me, it has to be a contending team. Now, if somebody like Orlando Magic would have gave Chris Middleton all that money, I would be like, what the hell are y'all doing? And don't get me wrong, I do I think Chris Middleton's worth that kind of money? No. I think he's a really good basketball player. But Milwaukee feels like there's a window of opportunity right now for them to win a championship. So they don't want anybody to come in and steal one of their main key pieces of them for preventing them from winning the championship. And so you can look at it. I look even with the Warriors still feel like they have a window. And getting a guy like D'Angelo Russell, you know, it gives them an opportunity. And I think if you feel like you have an opportunity to win the championship and you're close, you know, you could, you know, I mean, that's just a gamble you're going to have to take because these opportunities don't come around all the time. But like I said, a team that's not even in a running for a title, and if they make a super move like that, then you can totally understand it. I mean, you can totally be like, okay, what were they thinking?
Mm-hmm. Ross and Vucevic, they paid them good money. Like, I like them as players, but for that kind of money,
and that's why
that's crazy to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, I can see that. I still feel like if somebody – here's the thing. I'm going to let the West Coast have it. I'm going to shut up, honestly. I just feel like this piece of it is that you never understand what's going to happen year to year where guys are going to become available, where they get, you know, disinterested, disfranchised, or whatever's happened with their current team. But when you cap yourself out like that with guys that are good and you pay them as very good players, they're very good players, you pay them as great players, when those guys are available to become available, you don't have the ability to go get them because you overpay for these guys to keep that core together. And I see your point to that to an extent. But when you do that and you go all in and it doesn't work out and you have no longer have any financial flexibility to go find somebody who's come available who doesn't want to be where they currently are because you've overpaid these role players or really good players as great players and you can't go get them. And that's why I say that for some of those teams of you're keeping your core together, but you're overpaying to keep your core together. So now you got to give away two or three first rounders to get rid of that contract because it hasn't worked out because you want to go get this player X who's come available who you know is better than Chris Middleton or Tobias Harris. That's my only point.
We're having a lot of fun, And like you said, the NBA is taking up a lot of radio time in the off season, which can only benefit the NBA. One of the things I want to say about this free agency, Cantor. Apparently here, Cantor apparently got mixed up what was going on here in Portland. He left here thinking he only had 7 minutes with the Trailblazers to make a decision. And Damian said he had an hour, 48 minutes to make a decision. And Portland was going to pay him the same amount of money that he took in Boston. My one reflection about what he did, and he's still a little afraid of the Turkish government. Here in Portland, when it came to the Turkish government, and we're kind of, you know, far away and isolated to where here, I think he was really safe. I don't think he's as safe in Boston with the problems he's got overseas with the Turkish government. I think the Turkish government is a lot closer to him in Boston than they were to him in Portland, Oregon. He might have made a mistake, and you know, if that regime wins and they go after him, I could see them being able to get to him in Boston.
Well, when I read that article about Cantor in this 6 or 7 minute window he felt he had, you know, as we go through with our teams and lots of teams in the West, we pretty much know what all these teams have to spend. So I'm thinking, if I'm an NBA player and I'm looking for a contract with the Portland Trailblazers, I already know how much money they have to spend. So for him to think that he only had, you know, 6 minutes to make this decision, apparently he wanted to call a brother or whatever and get some advice, I understand that. But I would have been calling my brother 2 or 3 weeks ago, hey, here's what the team has. I think they're going to make me an offer. What's your idea on that? I wouldn't wait until the last few minutes. And, you know, and granted, the guy's got huge amount of stuff on his mind. So I'll give him that. And he did a fantastic job, you know, for the year here he played with us. We really appreciated him here. He's loved here already. But I thought that was kind of ridiculous how that whole thing played out. And I think it may just be him and his agent that just...
I don't think they wanted to be here.
Yeah, I don't know.
And they act like they did. And he always talked about enjoying it here and loving that ride we went on last year to get in the finals. But in the end, I think he wasn't genuine. And I think something happened in this whole thing here that made him, like I said, he left for the same amount of money that Portland was going to pay him.
That's a lot of money.
And that tells me that he didn't want to be here, even though it looked like in the scuttlebutt stuff I seen being in this town with him, looked like he loved it here and wanted to be here. And then when this came down, it doesn't look like he did. But like I said, when he went to Boston, my first thought was he's got those problems out there. And Boston's a whole lot more of an international city than Portland is, and a lot more flights from Europe to Boston, and New York is not that far away, which I think has the most flights that go from Europe into NYC. And NYC, what is 4 hours away from Boston? 6 hours away from Boston?
Four.
If he was in front of and in the East, he's gonna, and I don't, he wasn't gonna make that trip this year, but if he decides to go into Canada, and that was an issue with him in the East, he's going to be in Canada a lot more than he would have been here in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah. Go ahead, Rob. I'll let you have this one. Go ahead.
I mean, I think for the most part, he's safe as long as he's in America, whether it be Boston, whether it be New York, or whether it be Portland, whether it be Anchorage, Alaska. I think for the most part, I think he's safe as long as he's in America from that standpoint. Now, I don't know how the average citizens in Turkey feel about Enes Kanter. He may come across, more people of Turkish descent that may have certain feelings toward him in those areas of the world. I mean, I'm sorry, in that area of the country, in Boston and New York, things of that nature. But, I mean, keep in mind, he has to travel to those cities already, even if he stayed with Portland. And so I think as long as he's in the confines of the United States, he's going to be safe. So I don't think that's that big of a deal in regards to that. But one thing about Enes Kanter, I mean, the guy just talks too much. And
yes.
And at some point, he's got to close his mouth. He's always running his mouth about Zion Williamson being a Julius Randle with hops. I mean, come on. And it's just like Jalen Rose said, well, shucks, if he's Julius Randle with hops, Julius Randle averaged 22-9. So what is Zion going to do, 30-15? So that's not a bad thing. I don't know. Yeah, at some point he just needs to shut up, play basketball.
Well, to me, outside of this, I don't know if it's necessarily about a personal well-being kind of thing. To me, when I look at it, I look at it as a lateral move. He's looking at it saying, okay, Boston has lost those guys, but they still have, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. I can go there. They're the Boston Celtics. So if I'm going, and I hate Boston, and I'm a Lakers fan, I hate Boston. But if you're talking about in terms of a lateral move, and it's not a knock against Portland, so please don't get me wrong. But if you're talking about a lateral move in terms of competitiveness going from the Western Conference to the Eastern Conference, when I'm going to play from Portland as opposed to going playing for the Boston Celtics, there is a level of enthusiasm of, oh, man, I'm going to play for Boston, and I'm not taking a step back. So it's not the same aspect where we say, oh, well, Pat Riley's in Miami. But if you're leaving Philadelphia with all the talent that, Jimmy Butler's leaving, he declined that, maximum deal that Philadelphia was trying to get him to go play in Miami so he can be the man. You're like, what are you doing? You've lessened your chance to win. I don't feel like for Enes Kanter, he's lessened his chance to win by leaving Portland to go to Boston. And I think that's a piece of it. I think he's ridiculous for the whole 6 or 7 minutes. And I totally agree with you, Gary. You know what your team looks like. If you're a smart player and you have your pulse on the NBA and your team you're playing with and their salary cap structure, you knew that Damian Lillard was going to get that max contract. You know that they're going to make sure that CJ McCollum after that is going to be taken care of. You know that if Nurkic comes back and is the guy that we saw before he got hurt, that he's going to be taken care of. So those three guys are going to always be ahead of you in the stepping stones of the Portland organization. So if I'm looking for them, like, well, okay, that's the case. But I look at Boston, same thing with Tatum and Brown. They're going to be ahead of me, and Hayward's already getting the money. But I feel like Boston is that NBA lore. So when you have that piece of it, of not taking a step back, it's not like the Knicks and the Nets, where the Knicks are a dumpster fire and the Nets are ascending. You basically are saying Portland, Western Conference Finals team, Boston with some dysfunctional, but they still have the ability to get back to that kind of level in the East with all the movement as well. I'm not taking a step back to go to Boston, even if what I've talked about was ridiculous. Maybe he wanted to be closer to the East Coast so he could be closer to a more Turkish culture in terms of some of those cities around him in Boston, New York, and Philadelphia, whatever. I don't really know the demographics or how that takes place, but I feel like that's more accessible on the East Coast than it is on the West Coast. So it could be that piece of it as well.
I tell you what, though, if you're a Portland Trailblazers fan, I'll take a Hassan Whiteside for Enes Kanter trade in a heartbeat.
Yep.
I mean, you guys, even though Hassan Whiteside is on a contract for one more year, from my understanding, but, I mean, you take that chance. And like I said, I mean, the West could be open this year, and you have Lillard, you have McCollum, you get Nurkic back, and then you had a Hassan Whiteside, a real rim protector there with some athleticism. A guy has slightly improved his offensive game too. And I'll take that if you're the Blazers, even if it is for 1 year. I mean, you take your chances with that.
Can Nurkic play the four? And I'm not being funny. I just don't know. Like, can he play the four with Whiteside at the five? Because Whiteside is only a five. He's only a center. I don't think he can play the four. I feel like Nurkic has more versatility in his game that he can slide between the five and the four like an Al Horford and be really effective. But that's just me looking from the outside in. I point to you, Gary and Curtis. Do you feel like what kind of alliance are reliance can they have on each other at that 5-4 spot between Nurkic coming back and Whiteside? Can they be effective in those roles together with McCollum and a little bit like the 1 and 2 to make it work with Portland? Because I don't know, and I really am looking forward to you to your insight.
Well, I'll tell you, Nurkic is going to be out probably the early part of the season too. I mean,
yeah.
I don't
think that's
Gary Curry could probably tell us.
I think Whiteside
when he's
yeah. But as far as Nurkic before,
no,
you know that's just it's going to depend on the matchup. But not really. He's a center. He's
well, I just see the insurance. Nurkic is coming back on a bad injury, and maybe he won't be back until after the All-Star break. And when he does come back, it's probably going to be gently. He's going to have to get his legs, you know, a stupid pun. But he's going to have to get his legs underneath him.
So to speak.
Yeah, so to speak. So I think they got Whiteside mainly for an insurance. And I think Portland is also hoping that that boy's hungry. And that boy, only being here on a 1 year, he's going to play out. Show out to get the money, to get paid. So this could be a real win for Portland. But Portland got Bazemore, Muscle, they kept Hood. It looks like the move that Portland made, it looks like they got a lot more muscle, a lot more defense, which is what they're going to need if Denver and Utah are going to be better, and it looks like they are. And then the Lakers are going to be better, which they are. You're going to have to need that muscle. And I've heard, and this is hard to hear, but I've heard on the radio today that Portland got swept without Cousins, without Durant, and without somebody else. Portland basically got swept by Looney, Draymond Green, Clay, and Steph. And it just seems to be that Portland's kryptonite. But they went in a direction this year. Well, maybe they're going to just knock that kryptonite. And Draymond Green tears us up. And I think they got some people that might can beat Draymond Green up. And if they got that, they're going to be able to be a little bit better. They may not get swept anymore from that damn team.
Wow. There it is. All right, guys. Well, I'm nervous about your lady cutting off the show, man. So for the sake of East Coast and everything like that, let's go ahead and wrap this up, man, because I normally give you guys some shots, but we have definitely went beyond the boundaries of Pride Rock. So wrap this up, Rob, as always.
Come on, man. Not Pride Rock.
Ladies and gentlemen, we thank you again for tuning in. Another great edition of Talking Sports with 12 Man. Obviously, a lot of NBA talk going on, and obviously, I'm pretty sure we're going to be talking about it on next Wednesday night as well again. Maybe we'll have a Kawhi Leonard decision. Hopefully not the Lakers. Hopefully not the Clippers. Mm-hmm. Stay in Toronto. Stay in the Eastern Conference, dude. Stay in the Eastern Conference. Stay in the city with a little bit more culture than Los Angeles. A lot more, actually.
What?
Oh, yeah.
But once again, thank you all for tuning in. We'll be back on the air live again on next Wednesday night. That's going to be July 10th, 11 p.m. And Andre, that'll be close to halfway in the month of July, just so you know.
We're
the 10th of July on next week.
Mm-mm.
Mm-mm. So we'll be back. We'll be following listeners that were with us at the beginning of the show. Y'all might catch that joke a little bit. But once again, we'll be back on live on next Wednesday night, July 10th, 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific. Once again, we'll be getting a lot of NBA free agency talk. Maybe we'll have the Kawhi Leonard decision by then. We're getting close to the football season, so we're going to start ramping up training camp previews and predictions for NFL and college football. So we'll start slowly transitioning that here in a few weeks as well. So you definitely want to stick with us. We got a lot coming up. Major League Baseball All-Star Game, midseason. So we'll be having it all covered. So you definitely want to stick with us here at Talking Sports with the 12th Man. Good night, people. Draymond Green.
Good night.
I watched a college game of Draymond Green on ESPNU or ESPN Classic. Mild-mannered in college, I'll tell you that. Watching an old game, Michigan State against Duke.
What's up,
Andre? I can't believe you didn't play the clip.
I thought about it, but
he's slacking, man.
He thought
was flying by, Drake.
You gotta play the clip. Come on, man.
Which clip?
Lake No Negro is one that we have to play.
Gosh.
I cannot believe that you did not play Lake No Negro.
Oh my gosh.
It was in Lake Oswego and here in Portland
Lake, no
we call
Negro.
That Lake No Negro.
How are we really having this conversation after this?
The address I saw was in Lake Oswego and here in Portland we call that Lake No Negro.
How are we really having this conversation after this?
I'll give you guys another one that's coming out of Portland. We got a suburb called Hillsboro. But in here in Portland it's known as Hills Burrito. Hills Burrito. Because Hillsboro is full of the Hispanic people in that suburb of Portland, Oregon. So we got one of our suburbs is Lake No Negro. And I'm going to tell you, when I go through there, I used to get pulled over all the time. I don't go through there no more. In Lake No Negro, but every once in a while I do go to Hill's Burrito to get me some authentic Mexican food.
Oh God!
For the win. That's all I needed. I don't have anything else to say. That's all
he's
I wanted.
What?
Hey man, I love y'all for listening to the show. This shit has been great. We'll talk to y'all next week.
Have a happy 4th. But again,
have a happy 4th, everyone.
He dropping like D.J. Khaled. Another one. That's another one. Everybody be
hey,
everybody
Gary.
Be safe out there.
Gary, we
love
you,
thank
bro.
You.
Our thoughts and prayers are still with you, man. We love you, dog.
Yeah,
we hope everything works out for you.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, with your mom.
Appreciate
Jeff.
That,
yeah,
guys.
That's a good call. All right, bro. Be good. Have a good one. Have a good one, fellas. Yep. Later.
Yep.
Nice.